Crossing now to Australia to Jason Morrison. Evening, Jason.
Hey, g'day, how are you?
Not too bad. You're standing by for Harry and Meghan, are you?
Yeah. We're going to have a bit of a conflict in our house because the cricket is on and it's a day-night test match, and there's nothing that says paradise more to me than a day-night test match. We have one television, and that television also is the has the box attached to it that you can watch the Harry and Meghan carry on. And I just have to figure out whether it's worth the risk of the marriage to go home and argue to watch the cricket, or to actually have to endure the crap from the from the Sussexes. So, yeah, I don't know. It'll be an interesting thing when I eventually get there.
Well, the shops will be open. You could get a new TV on the way.
or go and stand in the street like in the 70s when people used to watch television outside the, because they didn't have one at home.
At the window.
You could try that.
Yeah, even better.
Yeah, through the window. That's like the moon landing.
Yeah, that's
right.
You and like about 20 other people just standing with your noses pressed to the window.
Miserable blokes eating McDonald's in the window watching the cricket.
So what's going on with this cheating claims in cricket?
Yeah, I know you probably think I'm obsessed with this sport, but we'll give it a minute, because I know that if New Zealanders know Australian cricket for anything, it's cheating. And one of them is the underarm delivery, which I don't need to mention much to about to bring it to the surface. And then the other one is the sandpaper gate game, as they refer to it, when the Australian cricketers were spotted on the field in South Africa pulling out a bit of sandpaper to grind the ball to take the sheen off it so that it would turn more in the air when it was being bowled against South Africa in a pretty ugly series. So why we're talking about this today? Well, David Warner, one of our biggest cricket stars, he's an opening batsman. It's a funny kind of guy, David Warner. People love him when he does well, and the rest of the time they can't stand him. And I think we're in that zone a bit, can't stand him right now. Warner was banned forever from being in a leadership role in Australian cricket after his involvement in that sandpaper incident of cheating on the field in South Africa back in 2018. He has just this week decided that he wants to have a crack at being a leader in cricket again, a captain, a vice captain of a cricket team again. And Cricket Australia put together this whole system that allowed him basically to appeal his lifetime ban. And he got halfway through it and realised, you know, I don't want to bring all this up again. See you later. That's it. I don't want to do it. Forget it. Drop it. Quite publicly too, said some fairly critical things to the cricket administrators. All right, that's kind of the end of the story until this morning when his manager gave an interview. And he has David Warner's a huge sports star. So he has a big money manager, one of the biggest money managers in the Southern Hemisphere, a bloke by the surname of Erskine. And James Erskine gave an interview and basically said, the only reason Cricket Australia doesn't want this to be resurrected and so publicly is because they know the truth. They know that the instructions to tamper with the ball came from executives of Cricket Australia. Now, remember, so far, Steve Smith, the once captain, was stood down and suspended. David Warner, the superstar batsman, was stood down and suspended. Another player, a bowler, was stood down and suspended. And that's kind of where it ended. Never went anywhere near the hierarchy. The coach resigned in shame and everything like that. But no one near the hierarchy was ever blamed for this. And Erskine has come out and said, well, I know the truth about this, and maybe it's time we start talking about the truth. And the truth is that executives in Cricket Australia told them to tamper with the ball to get it to do more things out on the ground so they could start winning against South Africa. Now, we are about to play South Africa in a series, the first series since the scandal. And it's going to happen in Australia. It's going to happen this summer. South Africa is weeks away, days away from landing here to start the first test. And this happens. You can only imagine what's going to happen when they meet on the field again. It's going to be back on. And it's a huge story here. I mean, we cricketers are like our little brothers when we watch them in the news. Cricketers get a lot of attention in Australia, and this is a huge story. And this whole scab has been picked so publicly, and it's going off.
Yeah, at the time Malcolm Turnbull came out, he it even got to that government level of comment. And is it at that level now?
It will be. I reckon by this time tomorrow, it will be the Prime Minister will be talking about it. But yeah, you're right. The Prime Minister then, Malcolm Turnbull, came out and basically apologised to the world for the behaviour of cricketers. And, and the players, I mean, they're, for everything that's said, they are still, many of them, quite young men, and they certainly were back when it happened. And they're very mothered inside the cricket thing. They're very protected. And then you've got this sort of situation where suddenly they are thrown under the bus so publicly, lose their livelihoods, lose their status. And in the case of David Warner, had his ambitions of one day being captain of Australia or vice captain stripped from him. And now this is back again. And, and there they are, the manager, his manager, with, essentially a dossier, but it sounds like he's about to drop to say, just in case you thought you knew everything about this story, here's something you didn't know. 3 years on, 4 years on from when it happened, and just as the team that they are up against that caused the whole ruckus in the first place is about to set foot back in Australia.
Watch this space. So, Jason, early release for the Bali bombing terrorist.
Yeah, look, I don't know. I don't know if there's been an incident in modern Australia that has really dug in deep, so deeply, emotionally, and passionately like the attacks that happened on the two nightclubs in Bali back in 2002. I mean, it's 20 years ago. We're talking about a lot of history tonight, aren't we? 20 years ago this happened. The people who did this killed that night 202 people. They were terrorists. They were radical Islamic terrorists who did this in the name of whatever on that night. People from 21 nations were killed. The overwhelming percentage of them were from Australians. 88 victims from Australia died that night. And there were dozens upon dozens that were that carry injuries for life, that will be wounded forever as a result of the bomb blast that went off, the heat and ball bearings that went through the air when the blast happened. They have Indonesia been gradually releasing people at the end of their sentences for these horrific terrorist attacks, which really every time it happens really stirs Aussies a lot. And I guess it does it so much because so many Aussies were there, and you don't have to go very far to meet someone who knows someone or be friends with someone who was there that night or whatever else. It's one of these weird crimes that just somehow everyone seems to know someone who was around on the night of the Bali bombing in Bali that night when it happened. So today, Indonesia decided to release the bomb maker, this guy called Umar Patek, with a claim that he had been de-radicalized and has sworn away from the radical fundamentalist views that he had. And he actually is going to go out in the community and be an evangelist for not being a radical nutcase that goes and bombs innocent people
How
in nightclubs. And
likely is that?
well, who knows? But think about this, right? It took them 10 years to get this guy to justice anyway. The blast happened 2002. He was eventually jailed in 2012 for 20 years, which was hardly enough anyway when it happened. And now today, Indonesia, our good friend, has given him half a sentence. So he's out 10 years. 10 years for that. 10 years for building the bomb that killed all these people. We had a bloke on the news tonight. It's a double amputee. He lost all his friends that night. He lost both his legs. He's lost his mobility. He's lost a lot of independence. He's lost everything. And his point was, what's this guy lost? He lost 10 years and now he's out. And, he's walking around the place with a certificate basically saying, look, I passed the exam inside jail. I'm better now. The Australian government is filthy about this. But, this is the problem. And nations like ours, we always have difficulty dealing with our neighbours. Ironically, Australia and New Zealand don't mind being frank about each other, but we never like being frank about everyone else that's around us. We always tread so carefully. And here we are today saying there's a lot that should be said, but it can't be said. It's dreadful, it's appalling, it's wrong, but that's Indonesia's decision. It's a kick in the guts. It's an absolute kick in the guts. And you just sort of, and I hear this all the time. You hear the Bali bombing people, they used to say these people should be put to death. They're terrorists, mass killers, they should be put to death. And then you go at the time, oh, do you really want to put people to death? And then this happens. And, as one bloke said, I got a life sentence. I lost all my legs, I lost all my friends, lost everything. And he got 10 years and he's out now. And you're right. You asked the question, what do you reckon the chances of him not committing crimes again? I don't know. I don't know, but I'm not prepared to take the risk. And I just sort of understand very much so when I hear people speculate upon, why we shouldn't consider early release for these people. Sure as hell, if he'd blown up 88 Indonesians, he wouldn't be getting out in 10 years in Australia.
Yeah, geographically a little difficult for Australia. I use that word sparingly, really, because of the Indonesian government and how they behave and react.
Yeah, and you're right, geographically. I mean, they're closer to us than you are to us, and if there's ever going to be a problem anywhere in our region, it'll be with Indonesia, probably. And Australia has to tread that very, very carefully. I mean, Indonesia is an overwhelmingly Islamic nation, not a radical, quite a modern Islamic nation, but there are pockets of very radical, and in this case, cult-like radical fundamentalism in parts of Indonesia. And we know that it's there. Indonesia knows it's there. Indonesia fears it as much. I mean, you can't forget this. We lost 88 Aussies out of the 202 there. Other nations, 21, there'd be people from New Zealand that would have died there too. There were a lot of Indonesians that died that night. And, in where it happened in Bali is not is a very different part of Indonesia to the rest of it. I mean, it's a sort of very liberal kind of place,
Tourist town,
and
yeah.
you're a tourist town, and you've got yourself, an election going on over there. You might have even seen that story the other day about, what appeared to be almost like a Sharia style law that was being introduced about, sex out of marriage that was going to be enforced on tourists in parts of Indonesia. That includes Bali. So you've got this really weird dichotomy of religious, ideological, and political beliefs that all come together and filter down in the fact that Australia needs to remain really good friends with Indonesia because they're too close to be an enemy.
Yeah,
And so we've got to tread this thing carefully, but oh God, letting out terrorists after such a short period of time, no way.
Justin, I was thinking too historically in terms of East Timor and what's gone on in the region there. So yeah, it's difficult political territory. But you brought up that what they're calling the bonk ban. So what are Australians thinking in regard to going on holiday to Bali now? I
Well,
mean,
they're laughing at it.
are
They're
they?
laughing at it. I mean, as one bloke at the airport said, and you could really only have this coming from the mouth of an Okja tourist wearing a singlet and thongs getting on a plane flying to Bali. My missus doesn't even know I play up, so how will they find out? And I thought, mate, you're on television, you idiot.
That was on television, right?
That was on television. That was a magical moment.
Got to be an
But
Australian.
yeah, like, it's right. Yeah, that's right. I was like the quintessential Australian D head, absolutely. But yeah, he was something special. Look, I think people look at this and, Bali is this funny place. It's almost like the place where everything that has rules, the rules don't exist for. And I've been there many times, really for work. I've never been there for holiday. I could think of nothing worse.
I've
And
been there
every
for a
time I've been
holiday.
there, it's been, yeah, I've been there for bombings. I've been there
Right. Oh, you were
for
there for that.
executions.
Oh,
I've been
no.
there for drug traffickings. I've been there for everything, horrific. And it's, I don't like the place, never have. And I've got very little time for it. And, but it is one of these places where money talks and where, fines and law enforcement are dealt with in old-fashioned ways, and I think it's one of these things that everyone looks at this and smirks and goes as if,
Yeah, they
and
might
you know
not be. Yeah,
until someone's arrested, they
that's
probably won't
right.
believe it's even true.
Because under the law, which the laws which are coming into effect in 3 years' time, extramarital sex could carry a punishment of up to 1 year in jail. That's not going
And
to be a.
then it's how you then go and enforce it, and then who can make a complaint, which is kind of the thing that I think would make tourists probably a little bit immune to this, because it's got to be coming from family members who make a complaint to authorities. So I'm not quite sure they're going to have the sex police out there looking for
Well,
people who haven't got wedding rings on. But you never
it's
know.
only
You
for
never know.
citizens of the nation. Right, not for
Well,
tourists.
I guess until you cross paths with one of them, then you haven't got a problem.
Right, I see what you're saying. Another data hack, but this time it was on a real estate agency.
This is sort of interesting. Look, there's so many of these, and you know, we talk every week about another one. This is a lot smaller, and in some respects, it's a little more frivolous. But that said, it's still 375 gigabytes of data stolen by a hacker from a real estate agent in one of the most affluent, elite, well-heeled suburbs in Australia. In fact, I dare say it's probably one of the most expensive suburbs in the Southern Hemisphere. A place called Palm Beach. Now, how do I describe Palm Beach? Ever watch Home and Away on TV on Zud?
A couple of times.
Home and Away? Yeah. All right. That Summer Bay.
Yeah.
It's Palm Beach. That's Palm Beach.
Very
and there's
nice.
Two, it's a peninsula. One side's a surf beach, the other side's river. So it's a beautiful spot. If you want to buy a house up there today, just had a look just for interest's sake. There's one selling for $42 million.
Whoa.
It's available now, a 3-month settlement. The average price there tonight's about $18 million of things that are on the market. And by the way, we're in a real estate downturn. So some of these places, I mean, there was talk some time ago Donald Trump was investing in Palm Beach. So that gives you an idea. Big money from all around the world goes to Palm Beach. It's beautiful. It's legendary. And there's really one real estate agent in town up there. Does a really good trade. I'm not going to pretend I'm in that end of the real estate market, but I once checked out a house through this real estate agent. And this place, you know, you go there and they provide you with champagne and food when you go check out a house. They're fair dinkum. They're big end. So their database has been hacked. In that is the names, details, addresses, private information, financial information, who knows whatever else real estate agents keep of every person that has potentially been through that place, bought a house, inspected a house, perhaps put an offer on a house, all those things, passport details, because you need to identify yourself formally to make offers at certain houses at certain times, details of real estate, all the things. So floating out there on the dark web tonight somewhere is probably the names and addresses of some of the biggest names in Australia, and I dare say the world, that's looked at buying real estate, the private details of this real estate office. And normally you say one real estate office getting hacked is news. It's more because who's on that list and what names are there and the clientele list. So far, they say only the staff have had their details listed, but it's one of these things where someone's out to extort money from them, and they're saying, here's a little tease of what we got. Would you like us to release the rest? The sample data that's hit the dark web has been very limited so far, but everyone's kind of looking forward, weirdly, with this one to see who they have. It's strange, isn't it? When it involves wealthy people, the whole mindset changes.
Well, who's the most famous person who lives there?
Well,
or has a holiday home there?
Nicole Kidman was there. Keith Urban, I think, has a house up there. I heard, and look, again, you never know, but I heard your former Prime Minister.
John Key?
A couple ago. Yeah, I heard he had investments up there, but I could be wrong. You know, you never. This is the thing about buying real estate at this end of the market. You don't know who owns it, but you kind of hear rumours of who is around there. But, right. Yeah, there was talk that he might be around there. There was also some talk a while back that the Clintons had an investment there. I never had that confirmed, but it's likely. You know, so it's that end. And spectacular homes. I mean, I'm trying to think of places I've been to in New Zealand that remind me. It does look very much like parts of Auckland, except you're facing straight out of the ocean and this magnificent beach below you, and houses are kind of stacked on top of themselves up the hill. And of course, the closer you are to the beach, and you can own a part of the beach yourself, you know, the more spectacular it is. But you know, we see stories all the time of very, very wealthy people from India buying into Palm Beach because they look at it, and I guess they see, you know, and Home and Away and places like it is quintessentially beautiful Australia.
Well, no wonder Home and Away. Then they wouldn't want to be filming in all those luxurious, well, they aren't very luxurious, the places that were on Home and Away.
It films there. It still films there. I'm my TV station owns Home and Away, and we film up there 2 or 3 days a week.
Oh, do you? I thought that it, isn't that the one that got canned?
No, that's Neighbours.
Oh, Neighbours, right.
No, Home, Home and Away is Australia's longest running TV show, and now it's been running longer than anything that's running, and it's still running, and it runs all around the world. I mean, you get it. It rates its backside up in the UK, all through India, all through Southeast Asia, translated. Someone told me they watched a Hebrew version of it in Israel. So, it's Australia's billboard, if you want, everywhere. And this is the real estate that they sell.
And where do they film in actual places in home, in Summer Bay?
Well, they film all the beach scenes out there. And the best part about it is Home and Away films all through winter. And because it always looks sunny, the poor people up there have to run along in swimsuits in 7 degrees with wind chill that drops it down to -4. And they've got heaters on the beach to try to, keep the body parts all fine as they run along the beach for take 25 of the scene. And it's all carried out on the beach, the filming, and then they have rebuilt the
Oh, you're
internals
the
of some
right,
of
of
the
course.
buildings in a studio.
Yeah,
So,
but surely those people who have that amount of budget to buy a house don't want all those cameras around.
Well, it's a big beach. It's like a 5K beach. They just go up the end.
All
There's a
right.
beautiful lighthouse on the top there, and the lighthouse is in every shot. And the lighthouse is heritage listed. And you apparently there's talk in Palm Beach is you're rich when you can see the lighthouse and the lighthouse can see you. So the closer you are to the lighthouse, the richer you are.
Well, maybe those details will come out over the next day or two or weeks.
I can't wait.
All
I can't wait.
right. All right. Hey,
Right.
Jason, thank you very much for joining us tonight. We'll catch you again next week.
Good on you. Thank you so much. See
Yeah.
you later.
See you later. Good luck with watching the cricket. See ya. Jason Morrison in Australia.